Hello and welcome back to the Tasty Debrief. This week we will be continuing our look at Game of Thrones with Episode 5, The Bells. Let's tuck in. As always, the night is dark and full of spoilers, so if you haven't seen the episode and care about spoilers, go have a watch and then come back and join us.
So probably the safest place to start with this episode is at the beginning. The opening sequence was quite interesting this time around.
So Varys' death was interesting. It's nice that there was a little bit of foreshadowing at the beginning with the like, oh no, don't betray Daenerys because otherwise she'll catch you and it's not going to end very well. And then that happened. It's sort of a little bit of foreshadowing as well to later on in the episode where we're getting more and more Mad King territory stuff going on when she sort of does a little bit of a snap. As well, it's just quite well handled. We have his sort of final line to Tyrion. The two of those characters are very much portrayed as best friends throughout much of the series. You know, the two characters that are incredibly put upon, but handle it by sort of joking through it in a lot of ways. It also puts an end to the sneaky spy stuff that we've seen. You know, now we've got Peter Baelish and Varys both killed off. It's kind of putting an end to that and sort of leans more into the very action-heavy stuff that we see for the rest of the episode. So, yeah, I thought it was well handled. It's also really well directed, that scene. I feel sorry for people who are watching it and they're having the problem where it's way too dark, because then that really wonderful CGI dragon would be invisible to them and it would just look like he's being burned by the night sky itself. I thought it was well handled. It kind of shows Drogon looking scary, which we haven't seen him do in a while because we keep seeing him looking sort of wide and majestic and epic flying way above the sky. But Drogon's a scary, jagged-toothed boy. He's not pleasant to stare directly down the mouth of.
But I think it was a really good way, especially to set up this episode with everything that Daenerys then made Drogon do. It was a really good way to set him up as actually, like, people should be afraid of Drogon. I also think it was a really nice sort of ending for Varys. It was a very solid sort of character ending. Like, the fact that he's always been for the people, he's always been, like, for the good of Westeros kind of thing. And he just, like, he knew that betraying Daenerys like that would mean death. And he just, like, accepted it, you know, took off his jewelry and just, like, went. It was really nice. And I think that the last sort of exchange between Tyrion and Varys as well was quite good. It was a very solid opening to this episode for the sort of tension building that they were going for as well. It was very much, like, from the beginning, the whole episode was sort of building towards. The opening of this episode was really, really good as well for, like, building tension. Obviously, like, the whole episode was basically building towards sort of Dany going mad at the end and everything that meant for King's Landing and the sort of destruction that came with it. But it was really, really cool to, like, start it off with, like, characters that we've always assumed were safe. Like, Varys has always been able to escape death, basically. He's always been sort of near enough to the danger that we're concerned, but always, like, Varys enough that we've known that he'll be fine. And it was very effective to start the episode with a safe character dying so that we knew that, like, nothing is safe this episode.
So, as you said, it's all building up to that moment where Daenerys makes her big fiery choice. That's sort of when the episode kind of really starts to hold that level of tension. Jon's a really interesting character that we follow because we kind of alternate back and forth between Daenerys sacking the city to different characters on the ground, one of the main ones being Jon, because we have that really nicely edited moment where Daenerys is making the choice and we're cutting back and forth between her, Jon, and a few other characters, and, like, how are they reacting to this? And it was nice to see Jon attempt to mitigate some of the issues with the sacking. He's, you know, desperately on damage control, like, oh my god, I can't have my men carry on with this, you know, pillaging mindset. And he's, you know, executing his own people for attempting to harass innocent women on the streets just because Daenerys has made this choice that, you know, she's going to take out the innocent people doesn't mean that he has to be involved.
It was kind of really interesting that this episode was sort of divided into, I would say, like, maybe four people. It was obviously Daenerys. Maybe four groups of people, because you've got sort of Daenerys going mad, burning everything. You've got Jon and Tyrion and, to an extent, Jaime and Arya, all sort of desperately trying to, like, you know, damage control, stop this from happening, you know, ring the bells, don't start a fight. Cersei and Qyburn, who at that point are, like, just really trying to survive. She's not done a lot this season, Cersei. She's been sort of fairly useless. But, like, that was another sort of segment in the episode. And then you've got sort of Aya's kind of in two groups because she's kind of damage controlling, but she's also like sort of an outside perspective on it. Like, this is the first time really that we've seen Aya completely like discombobulated, doesn't know what to do about anything. She had her sort of train spotting choose life moment. Everything after that was basically she was just the point of view of the rest of King's Landing. And it was really cool to see that actually there are quiet moments with, like, you know, Jaime and Cersei and Aya in the rubble and all that kind of stuff. It was a really good way to sort of show exactly how much impact Daenerys was having on everybody.
So great to see that the Scorpions have Stormtrooper aim.
Seemingly Drogon is just completely impervious to everything.
Like, he took out the entire Iron Fleet. Then he took out all the Scorpions on the wall. He also took out the front gate in, like, it was beautifully done, but made the entire Golden Company storyline completely irrelevant. Strickland's death was so funny.
I think it was a very sort of unintentionally funny moment, but funny nonetheless. Like, Golden Company are supposed to be unbeatable mercenaries, you know? That's the whole reason that Cersei, like, paid for them and, like, slept with Euron to have him go fetch them, and instead they were just sort of a bit rubbish. Like, the Golden Company did nothing to help and then didn't even get a look in on the fight. They just kind of were exploded and died.
Though I have to admit, the one thing that's sticking with me from Strickland's death is your comments as it was happening. As Grey Worm was coming towards him, you're just sitting there going, that's a green screen.
You're just made to look at this really, truly terrible green screen shot for, like, way too long. And I think it was the only thing I said throughout, like, the whole episode was like, that's a green screen. It's a really bad green screen. It just completely threw me. It was like the only dramatic moment afforded to anybody from the Golden Company as well. And it was completely trashed by the fact that I could see, like, the white outline around the edge of Grey Worm.
It's also the annoying thing where the showrunners seem obsessed with this idea of putting infantry in front of a citadel, which is not something you do. I understand, like, mercenaries, they don't matter really. You've just paid for them. They should win. But you put them behind the citadel, you make the army come forward so you can just pick them off and make them weaker and maybe then go out and hit them. But no, they put an army in front of the walls. There is no point to that.
It wasn't a terribly big army either.
No.
It was like, what, like 20-something dudes? Like, it was like pitifully small for like this big Golden Company that she had to like prostitute herself to get like a whole fleet of ships from a madman to go and fetch them, and then it turns out there's like 40 dudes. And they're rubbish.
I did enjoy, like I said it earlier, but I really did enjoy the entrance of Drogon behind them. And
that
how
was very cool.
Damaging that fire was there.
I know that you have an issue with the dragon fire.
There's just no consistency in dragon fire. In previous seasons, we get entire stories about Harrenhal and how the king was roasted alive because the dragon fire could melt rock. And he just cooked him. And then we have Drogon flying around destroying scorpions with big explosions and flaming up the Red Keep and destroying it with fire. And then he flames on some people and for dramatic effect, they don't melt. They just kind of run around screaming and burning.
Well, I mean, it is a little known fact, but stunt people are technically impervious to dragon fire. So it's really only their clothing that's being hurt anyway. But it was a little bit sort of distracting. The dragonfire in this episode as well was a bit sort of problematic for me because it seemed like they couldn't really sort of nail down a visual style that they wanted to use for the dragonfire.
They're clearly trying to draw off modern day weaponry imagery with things like napalm and carpet bombing, but they use both. Like, carpet bombs explode everything in a radius and napalm sets people on fire. It can't do both. But apparently that's what Dragonfire both explodes things around it, but also sets people on fire so that they burn horribly. And it's kind of constantly going back and forth between those. I get the use of modern-day imagery. I think that's really clever, of, like, you know, dragons being the fantasy equivalent of a nuke.
Maybe he was doing some, like, low-level Dragonfire, and it was just, like, enough to sort of set them on fire and let them burn to death rather than, like, just roasting them like they did Varys. You know, like, maybe he's got different settings, that's fine. But there's one shot that I have a real issue with, and it's, there's, like, a moment where Daenerys flies over a street, it's just like she's doing it all the way through the episode, and it only happens the once with this shot. But she flies over a street, and Drogon sets a bunch of stuff on fire, and it cuts to a completely black screen, with just some flaming dudes running around. And it almost looks like it's taken out of like a music video or something. Like, it's so overly stylized and it doesn't fit with the rest of the episode that it completely threw me out of it for a second. But they only used the shot the once, and it kind of, because they didn't keep that style or keep that theme going, it kind of just looked like a mistake.
I feel like this episode really suffered with not sticking to aesthetics. Like, it would set something up and then ignore it and then come back to it. It was a little bit jumpy in that way.
Yeah, there were some questionable style choices. Like, there was some stuff that I didn't really understand the significance of, and there was some stuff that was like definitely supposed to be really significant, but I did not get. Like the horse.
Is Arya dead?
I'm not sure if she's dead or if like Bran walked a horse and was like, you know, your taxi's here. Like, I don't, like, what was the point of the horse?
Well, like, there are some theories as well that kind of death rides a pale horse. So is that implying that she's just chosen life? But now, death has come calling and she must be death again.
Yeah, right. That's what I thought as well. Like, death rides a pale horse. And it's very, it calls back to Daenerys, because the first creature that we see Daenerys interact with is the silver that Drogo got her, you know? And I was like, this is like the pure white horse that she rode when she was pure and didn't have dragons and was, you know, still a child, basically. And now this pure white horse is covered in blood and dirt and soot and ash and that's kind of a representation of Dany, but then they put it in a scene with Arya.
They've stocked up on the symbolism far too much. Also, if Arya isn't dead, she should be, because she is around the corner from some toasty people.
Yeah, I mean, she very much Tyrioned her way through this episode, just got knocked out every 5 minutes and conveniently avoided all the fire.
They seem to go for a weird... like, with all the Arya scenes, it was like scenes from Saving Private Ryan. You said earlier about the fire being similar to, like, modern warfare. And then kind of throwing Saving Private Ryan in there kind of makes sense.
Saving Private Ryan and Children of Men, I think, are two. I think those scenes are really well directed. I just don't think it's the right character to do it with.
John is the logical choice for that.
Jamie, I think, as well, would have probably worked. Of, like, it would make sense for him, because I kind of scramble desperately through the streets. He's a bit of a coward. Again, I think it's really well directed. Some of the special effects there are really great. The set design of as Arya's walking through is absolutely phenomenal. It's all, like, really technically well done, of this medieval version of this modern war film and showing the horrors of dragons. But weird character choice. Is Arya not really cool anymore? Is she back to being this scared child? It's weird, but I don't know. While I was watching it, I was like, yeah, this is really technically well done. I'm never going to be able to do anything that good.
I really enjoyed the sequences with Arya running through King's Landing. I think it was really cool to see, like, she was trying to save people, which, you know, she hasn't really been that person in seasons previous. She's always been the person, like, this guy's inconvenient to me or he hurt my friends, so, like, he's gonna die. Like, there's no option about it, you know? And it was really cool to see Arya turning towards, like, trying to save people, but she was also very quick to, like, if they don't want to be saved, they don't want to be saved. That's their problem. And it was a really cool, sort of, very simple visual representation of, like, where her character is at now, in that, like, she chose life, she chose to walk away from Cersei and was kind of a bit lost as to, like, who she was after that. Like, very quickly became sort of quite bewildered and, like, got knocked out a bunch of times. Like, she, like, with the loss of her sort of list and the task that she set herself from, like, season one or season two, I think it was, from the moment that she started saying the list, that's been who she is. It's like looking for these people to end their lives, to sort of make herself feel better. And I know that she sort of deviated from that with the House of Black and White, but she didn't stay. She chose again to go after those people on that list. And it's like, after she sort of gave up on the list, she didn't really know where she was. And it was like a really cool way of showing that, like, Arya, without that aspect of her sort of character, is a bit of an unknown quantity.
We got Clegane Bowl.
I really enjoyed Clegane Bowl. Starting it off with Qyburn's death as well was brilliant.
It was simultaneously everything I wanted and underwhelming, and that made me love it more.
Yeah, a lot of people I've heard have an issue with Clegane Bowl, but I'm like a big fan. I really enjoyed it.
It's well choreographed, like really well choreographed. You can tell from some of the behind the scenes stuff, that poor Hound, you can see that how genuine it is that, like, he's been slammed against a wall like 100 takes in a row, and like by the end of it you can see the actual anguish on his face as he's just like, ugh, not again.
Is it Rory McCann, the actor? Sensational performance.
He's brilliant. I love him. I think he's great.
Like, his best performance in the entire series. Just the raw emotion of that scene.
Especially when that scene followed so quickly after his, like, moment with Arya.
Yeah.
I think that was a really, really cool character moment to end the Hound on as well. I think it was really brilliant to see, like... Because this is, like... He's always been towards, sort of... Sansa and Arya, both. He always saw them as kind of innocent kids. And, like, he's always been... pretty decent towards them. He's not had the best language around them, but you know, he's always tried to protect them. And I think it was a really cool sort of rounding it off to be like, the last real thing he did before he went to fight his brother was to protect Arya like one last time.
Can we also talk about Cersei ducking out?
That was brilliant.
I thought it was really well done. It makes total sense for the Hound to just be like, I don't care, do what you want, off you go.
He could have had a swing.
It's not worth it.
I just think it's really great that Cersei was looking at Clegane Bolt getting started and being like, you know, I'm just gonna nope out of that whole situation.
The makeup on the mountain as well. He looks just horrifying. Makeup artists don't get enough love. Whoever, if you're listening to this, makeup artist on Game of Thrones, you did a good job.
I would also like to claim some brownie points for calling the Hound and Mountain's death in fire.
Well, to be fair, I really love that they jumped off the tower, because after episode four. Where Missandei died, and we were all there being like, oh, she could have Harry Potter'd it. She could have, like, you know, grabbed Cersei and taken her with her. And then the next episode, it was like the Hound just did. He just grabbed his brother and took him over a cliff. Like, I loved that.
So after Cersei does her little duck out, it's like, no, I'm. You guys are doing your own Clegane Bowl thing here. I don't want to get involved. Let me just slip away. We have a really interesting scene between Cersei and Jaime. Obviously, it's fulfilling prophecies from, like, series one. You know, we'll come into the world together, we'll die together. I think Cersei, during this episode, being, like, frantic and panicked works really well. Her very last thing is, like, I don't want to die. People were really mad about that. It's like, oh, Cersei's meant to be this strong character. She would never act like that. Have you been watching the show? Cersei is wildly panicked and gets incredibly distressed and almost childish at points with her immediate reaction to stuff. Jaime is a very different matter. He has basically undone most of his character development from the past few series to be where he is now. I can kind of see Jaime making the decision to go back to Cersei, but his decision to abandon Brienne to do it is really odd. I think that they could have handled it slightly differently and still ended where they did. And I just want to talk about Cersei's performance during this episode. Absolutely stunning. Her sort of freak out is one of the most genuine I'm about to die freak outs in films that I've seen ever. It's fantastic. But the scene just before this is also very odd.
I have issues with the sort of Euron versus Jaime dad fight, because... like, I understand, like, both of these men are, for their own reasons, very invested in Cersei and in the child, which I get, like, that's fine, you know? But the fight was just weird. It was really straight. It was like a proper sort of slug it out, like, screw the weapons that you both have a good number of. Let's just punch each other until one of us dies. That's fine. Weird fight is not the first time that Game of Thrones has done that. But then Euron's weird Deadpool moment where he stares directly into camera and's like, I'm the man that killed Jaime Lannister. Like, first of all, you know, no, you're not. Because he died in a castle that Daenerys made Drogon break. So technically, Drogon is the man that killed Jaime Lannister. But also, like, why is he staring straight into... like, I get that Euron's mad, but he's not, like, Deadpool mad. Game of Thrones mad, contained behind that fourth wall. Like, let's just rebuild that for a second, please, Euron, because, like, stop it.
Also, you have the issue that no one's gonna know that it was Euron that killed Jaime Lannister. That's Euron's whole thing. Where he wants to be remembered, he wants to have that history, he wants to be known as Euron the Great Pirate. And now he's died on a beach with his armada destroyed. And his one great thing meaning nothing. And he's probably super aware of the fact that his family line, his heir, isn't going to live on if Cersei was ever pregnant with his child anyway.
It's also a little bit hilarious that he's not actually likely to be found. He was dying on a beach at low tide. He's just going to kind of get, like, swept up and washed away, and no one's really going to know what happened to him. So the assumption that everybody left in King's Landing is going to make is that he just died on his boat with his fleet, made no kind of spectacular... Like, he couldn't even hit the dragon with the scorpion again. Like, he didn't even get to, like, match his last fight with Daenerys. He just kind of, as far as everyone else is concerned, he just died.
I definitely feel like, as a character, he needed more screen time.
There wasn't enough time devoted to the development of his relationship with Cersei, which is one of my main issues with the whole of season 8, is that, like, Cersei wasn't in it enough, and when she was in it, it wasn't really focused on anything other than the fact that she really likes to drink by the window. But, like, she's always been a really interesting character. She's always been a complete coward, which is why I agree with you that, like, the performance and that, like, her last moments were brilliant. She's always been a complete coward. She's always been very much like Daenerys. She's always hid behind bigger, more powerful things. She's either been hiding behind Tywin or behind Jaime or behind the Mountain or behind Qyburn's scorpions. You know, she's always had something bigger and more powerful than herself protecting her. Very much like Dany has always had the dragons or Drogo or Jorah. Like,
speaking of the Mad Queen, I don't understand the amount of hate that her change is getting.
I kind of understand it, but I think that a lot of people kind of are sort of jumping on the bandwagon of, like, yeah, no, they ruined Daenerys, blah, blah, blah. But they really haven't. I think that we've seen in every season there's been a person that she's burned alive, and there's always been someone nearby being like, I mean, you could not, you know, it's probably not worth burning this person alive. You know, you don't have to tie the witch to your dead husband's funeral pyre. You don't have to roast the Tarleys. Like... But I think the issue that's coming from it is that everyone's saying it feels too rushed. And what's actually happened is that we've gone from everything up to sort of halfway through season 7, when we saw Dany burn a person, we saw it from her perspective. And because we were in her shoes, it was justified and we were on her side. But now in sort of the end of season 7 and the rest of Game of Thrones, it's been from the perspective of her advisors and the people underneath her. And all of these people have pretty much always been against it. But now that we're seeing it from their perspective, it feels like a really sudden jump from, like, we're on Dany's side. This is the right thing to do. She thought she was doing the right thing, to, like, what the hell, she's gone mad. I feel if they'd made more of a transition, or, like, throughout the whole show, had it been more from the perspective of somebody else, like, looking on, and, like, I don't think it would have received a fraction of the hate that it's got.
When you kind of think about it, it's really clever writing, because through these seasons, we've had the idealized version of Dany. We've had a version of Dany which everyone's seeing. Like, so all her supporters are seeing this great warrior queen who's gonna break the wheel and free the world. And then kind of the reaction we've had is how people would react within that situation, where it's like, no, this is wrong. What's happening? Why is this suddenly happening? She can't go mad.
You know, like I called it, like, Daenerys was always going to be the Mad Queen and the Queen of the Ashes. She was always going to go off when it got to King's Landing. She was always going to, you know, go a bit over the top in trying to get to Cersei. But, like, it was one of those things where, like, while I was watching it, the main thing that stuck out to me was Emilia Clarke's performance. Like, the last shot of her face that we see in the episode is her mounted on Drogon, having seen, like, the bells are ringing, we've won, I could just fly straight to the Red Keep and get Cersei and be done with it. And you kind of see that sort of look of heartbreak on her face, where, like, it's almost like she's like, no, I feel like I need to burn the city. I don't know the intent behind that look. Like, I feel like that'll come clear in episode 6, I hope. Whereas I don't know if she's supposed to be, like, heartbroken because she's realised that, like, she is her father's daughter and, like, she has to burn these people, or if it's because she realises that she's going to betray all these people that she's brought with her, like, you know, Jon and Tyrion. But I think it was a really spectacular moment of performance to see that sort of that genuinely broken look on her face before we just see her go completely bats and decimate a city.
She's basically equating them to the masters in Meereen. And though that's not the case, who's going to argue with her? she's got a dragon.
I think there's a lot of people who, when they were watching the episode, kind of didn't really realise that she's burning these people because, as far as she's concerned, they flooded into the Red Keep to support a false queen. As far as Daenerys is concerned, every single person in that city is a traitor. They all chose to stand by a queen that she doesn't think is the rightful ruler. So we began the episode with a betrayal and a death, and, you know, I think that Dany's going to see this as Tyrion's last betrayal. But having said that, I don't think Tyrion's going to die next episode. I do think Dany's going to die. I think that there's going to be some stark justice dealt out next episode. They made a big point of, like, drawing a lot of links between Arya and Daenerys and Jon and Daenerys. You know, Arya was running through the streets with all these innocent people, and Jon was desperately trying to sort of stop his soldiers and the Unsullied from, you know, killing the innocent. And I think that because that was basically done on Daenerys' orders and through her own will, I think one of those two Starks is probably going to... I think they're gonna Ned Stark it, you know, like, look her in the eye, hear her last words, and swing the sword. I think that it's not... Jon's not going to be able to excuse that. He saw her being asked to stop if the bells were rung, and he heard the bells ring, and he saw her not stop. And I don't think he's going to be able to excuse that, despite everything he said about she's always going to be my queen. I think someone's going to have to take Daenerys out. That said, I don't think the dragon's going
to
die.
There's nobody left who can kill a dragon, really.
Yeah, quite. They're kind of just like, I think the only thing that can kill the dragon now is, like, the dragon.
So I agree with you that I don't think Daenerys is going to make it. Jon or Arya, it's going to be one of those two. That's what I've literally written, just Jon or Arya, they're not going to allow it to happen. I do think that Tyrion's going to bite it, because Daenerys is not going to stand for his constant betrayal. He's going to get the Varys treatment.
It's always going to come back to Dany, isn't it? She can't survive.
She's got to die. I really like the character. She's never been one of my favourites, but it's always been a character that I like... really genuinely enjoyed watching the progression. She's the one that's gone through, with the exception of, like, Arya and Jon, she's one that's gone through, like, the most changes. I'd quite like to see Drogon be okay, though. It'd be nice, like, with the end of the Dance of the Dragons story, there was one dragon that just kind of just flew away and was like, no, I'm done with this.
Are dragons immortal in the Game of Thrones universe? I don't remember.
I'm not sure about immortal, but I'm fairly certain they will just continue to sort of age and get bigger.
As well, I think we should look at who do we think's going to win Game of Thrones, or sit the Iron Throne in the end, as it were.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think anyone wins this situation. I think because I know that George Martin isn't terribly happy with the end of the show, and a lot of people who've, like, worked on it and stuff have come out saying, like, the ending's a bit, like, not a lot of people are terribly satisfied with it. I know that George Martin doesn't think this is the end, and he's also quite disappointed with the ending, which makes me think it's going to be, like, a kind of, like, semi-happy ending. Like, it's not going to be terribly happy because people are going to die. But I think it's going to be sort of a fan-servicing ending, which makes me think that, like, Jon Snow is going to end up on the throne reluctantly, but I feel like he's probably going to end up there.
I
don't
agree.
Want it to happen, but I feel like because everybody loves Jon Snow and they killed him and then had to bring him back because no one was happy that he was dead, like, I feel like it's just going to be a bit of a fan-servicing ending, and it's going to be, like, Jon Snow being like, oh, I don't really want to be king, but, like I've just killed me missus, so, like, I should probably be king, you know? It'd be quite... I don't know that anyone's actually going to sit the Iron Throne, though, because as far as I know, it's now under a large pile of rubble. So, whether or not anyone actually sits on it would be interesting.
Metaphorically, but I agree. I think it's also going to be Jon makes the most sense. Like, with both our death predictions, Dany's probably going to get killed off, and then Jon's the last remaining Targaryen, so it makes sense for him to take the place. Then Jon will sit it, and it will get a shot at the end where it slowly does Clockwork Orange pan back from him on the throne.
It's not a throne prediction, it's not a death prediction either. I do have a couple of predictions of, like, people that are going to turn up next episode. People were so angry about him not petting Ghost before Ghost left that Ghost is definitely going to turn up next week. I think that there's going to be some sort of, like, reunion moment with Jon and Ghost, because otherwise people are going to lose their minds. And I definitely think that, like, Tormund's probably going to show up again, because if Ghost shows up, like, someone's going to have to walk the dog to King's Landing.
I've said that I think Jon is going to kill Dany and then revoke his title. And then the heirs to the throne would either be Sansa or Bran.
Well, it would be Sansa, because Bran's not Bran Stark anymore. He's the Three-Eyed Raven.
Or Arya.
Oh, Arya's...
Well, that's not Arya.
Further down in line again.
Well, yes. The three in line would be those three.
Yeah.
Sansa would make sense from a technical perspective, because the costume designers have been drawing a lot of parallels between her and Cersei. So it would sort of make sense of like, oh, Cersei was the last person, and then it goes to Sansa. They've been drawing loads of parallels between those two, and Sansa would be a better queen than Cersei would, certainly.
I mean, I wouldn't be completely unhappy with Sansa sitting the throne. I just feel like it would be a cop-out. Like, as far as... not considering it as a show, but like considering Westeros, like, Sansa would be a good ruler. She's proved that. She's learned from all of the worst people and some of the best people, and she's constructed herself a moral code and a way of doing things that we've seen in the North, and we've seen when she's negotiating with Dany that, like, works. Everybody in the North respects her and follows her when Jon is not there. Like, she's established that she can rule. I just feel like it would be a bit of a cop-out to end up with Sansa on the throne.
And that's all we have time for. We hope you enjoyed. If you want to have a chat with us about any of the things we said, why not tweet us at @the_tasty, or even leave us a voice message here on Anchor. Thanks for listening, and we shall see you again soon.